Hello, my name is Peter Cinnamon, and you're listening to a podcast all about the Irish League. In our top flight, we are officially 11 games in. Every team has played everybody else, which means we can look back and review how everybody's getting on. The quarter season catch-up, if you will. We will look back and see how some of those title challengers are getting on, see which teams have massively exceeded expectations, and give a stern look at the teams that know they need to do a bit better. We'll be reviewing all the latest games and look ahead to Spooky Friday's slate of fixtures on this week's edition of Kicking Match. It's time to wave goodbye to the vestures of the so-called early season, as the race is well underway for the Gibson Cup after every team completed their first lap round the Premiership circuit. There's no trophies given out in October, at least not yet. But joining me on the pod to metaphorically tie ribbons in my hair and chat everything Irish League, it's fellow sports podcaster and Irish League stat man, welcome back, Ali McCalmont.
Hi, Peter. How you doing, my friend? Haven't seen you in a little while this season.
I know. This with the rotating chair that is this podcast, sometimes you don't get to just chill out and chat with the people that you usually do, which is great, because now we get to catch up on all the comings and goings right here in person on this podcast. And I know every time I'm nattering to you, one of the first things I talk about is your connection with the Sunday Life's flavor of fantasy football. It's something I always have a keen eye on. It's something which I am focused on more than ever. Just if I can talk about the other flavor of fantasy football, the one ran by Niffle. I'm currently in the top 10, like 6th or 7th, so I'm doing great there. I don't think I'm doing so well in the Sunday Life one, and I think it's probably because he didn't pick Ben Wilson. It was tough this year, I'll say this. Picking
the team. I heard that obviously quite a lot, and I will talk about the Niffle one because it's a different game to the way we work our game. We've always looked at it as ours is a little bit of a season long thing, and you pick your team and you stick with it. And there's a couple of transfers, whereas the Niffle one you do have to sort of stay on board with it every week, change teams and things. Each to their own, you know what I mean. I like just the sort of pick your team and let it go and sort of things, whereas a lot of people like to get into it. But yeah, at the start, a lot of people did come on and say this is the toughest sort of pick we've ever had, and that there were very few people you could pick from. But in a way, that's kind of the way we like it, and that you do have to sort of know your league then and go down and pick your lock goal player and pick your Newry player, your Carrick player, and try and find those little bargains. If you can pick that little bargain, it's not just about picking your top level players, because everybody can do that, and that's what management's about, you know, as well, trying to pick the little gem that's coming through that you know nobody else knows about. And I just think that's and the one player per club thing, I like that as well, because again, we've talked about it before, it keeps everybody involved. So I like it being tough, to be honest with you.
I know what you mean, because I feel slightly delighted, because it was hard to get all these players in, and I decided to go for Sloan from Larne, and the few goals that he's popped up with, I'm like, yes, because I've had to fit in all the big boys. If only I could have picked out Ben Wilson on my team and a few others, I would have been loving it. But that's why I'm not near the top of that one. Who are the big point scorers this year? I know if you had Laurie last year, you would have been loving life. Who is the smuggest player owner this season?
Ben Wilson is the big pick this year, but it was actually in the report in the paper on Sunday that Joe Gormley obviously got the hat-trick a couple of weeks back, and he's back in favour now with Wilson as a partnership. We talked about, we might get into it when we're talking about Cliftonville, but a lot of people started to transfer Joe out and bring Ben Wilson in, because obviously Joe wasn't playing at the start of the season, Ben started, but then Joe got the hat-trick, and then a few people decided, uh-oh, Joe Gormley's back again, let's get rid of that guy Wilson and get Joe Gormley back in. But listen, that's management. It's happened very similar at Larne. Everybody had Lee Bonus at the very start of the season, and then suddenly he got injured, and Andy Rann was scoring every week. So let's get Randy Rann back in, and within 11 minutes of the game the other week against Glenavon, Andy Rann gets injured, on comes Bonus, 9-minute hat-trick. So that's kind of what fantasy football's about. It's rolling with the punches and just trying to get ahead of the game. But between those two, you know, but obviously Ben Kennedy in the midfield is the current top scorer at the minute.
The one thing I always look for when I'm picking my Sunday Life fantasy team is the midfielders that play every week, but most importantly, who will score goals, and a player who is getting lots of goals from midfield. And if you had him in your team, you had a really good week this week, is Chris Shields. He gets a double in the big clash at Windsor Park between Linfield and Glentoran. A tale of two teams feeling very differently about how they're going at the minute. Let's start with Linfield. After playing 11 games, we're at the quarter part of the season. Not mathematically, but it feels like we're at that quarter mark in the season where every team has played everybody. If we stop the league right now, Linfield are top. And they've got a nice little cushion. 5 points, four wins in a row. They're scoring plenty of goals. They look to have tightened things up at the back. And it would be on occasions like Friday night where they would slip up. I remember so clearly, I'm sure many people will as well, pretty much the same time last year, this was Glentoran's night. Going in on a Friday, scoring three goals, I think it was, and it was just all a part of that epic run that Glentoran were on last year. Things have flipped. Linfield aren't chasing anymore. They're leading. That's where they like to be. And others are slipping up while they're scoring goals, and they're doing it with a certain sense of style and confidence. The one thing from Friday night, they were not made to work for it. Glentoran looked like a team who hasn't won in four games. They didn't rise to the occasion. They looked completely out of sorts. I think it's fair to say Warren Feeney is under the cosh. He is feeling the pressure.
Well, I think that's an understatement, Peter. Under pressure is a bit of an understatement. Obviously, the week before, up front and central, watching them play Carrick at Taylor's Avenue and watch the aftermath of that game. To be honest with you, it was sort of quite vitriolic at the end of the game, and they lost to Carrick. And it actually became quite difficult because one side were given Warren Feeney quite a lot of stick, and then another side of Glentoran supporters were given the supporters who were giving him stick. So it was kind of quite difficult to watch at times, to be honest with you. It has been a bit of a toxic situation at Glentoran right from the start. And even on Friday night, I watched the game on Friday night, and for 10, 15 minutes, I thought, well, Glentoran look up for this. They were getting, Junior was up top, but he was getting McCartan on the left, O'Connor on the right, were getting involved, and they were sort of pressing Linfield back, but it almost looked like there was a little switch and they just suddenly stopped supporting Junior. And the ball just kept coming back then, and suddenly Linfield just got on a roll, and it became wave after wave of attack. And really, from that minute on, it just looked like a matter of time before Linfield scored. And okay, first goal, you could say it was a little bit fortunate with the deflection, but it did look as if it was coming, and it just, poor Junior up front, he was just horribly exposed on his own, and the ball, as I say, just went up to him. He's fighting against three centre halves really, and couldn't keep the ball. And then just a moment of madness, just with Wilson pushing McKee in the box. And that was the penalty, and 2-0. And it really, from that minute on, it looked like nothing else than 2-0. Whether or not Linfield were going to score any more. But from that minute on, it was difficult to watch, really, from a Glentoran point of view.
What I think was most frustrating, if you were of the Glentoran persuasion, is that this is a full-time team. This is a team who's sitting there every day during the week working on styles of play, getting that chemistry, and they just looked to be completely out of ideas going forward. And they are a team who's not scoring goals. They're the lowest scorers in the top six currently. And the only other teams that have scored similar amount, like Carrick have scored more goals, Dungannon have scored more goals, they've only got 14 in. And there has been lots of talk of this injury crisis at Glentoran. I know I've reflected it on here, and there has been injuries, but this is a team that still has plenty of talent, and they just aren't working together. There's players playing in positions that doesn't really suit them. I know Bobby Burns has played as a wingback in previous times, but we only have to go to last year and how impactful he can be in these big games in a more forward central role. There's trying to balance the team out, and then there's just not making it as effective. And that's where the frustration is coming from. Yes, the results aren't coming, but if they aren't getting the goals, they're not going to get these results. And for a team that wanted to push on after the fallout from Mick McDermott last season completely derailed their season. They're feeling like their season hasn't got going and they're looking up at the top of the table and there's 11 points difference after one round of fixtures. It has all gone pear-shaped.
It's a huge gap between their rivals. You know, 11 points is a huge gap to pick up. That immediately means that Linfield have effectively got to lose four games before Glentoran even get close. And I mean, just watching them on Friday night, you've mentioned it there about people playing out of position. I did feel sorry for him, Bobby Burns. He's probably up against the most skillful player in the league in Joel Cooper, who's on fire. You know, and he did sort of skin him a few times, you know. But I mean, you do feel sorry for him. It's not his position. He's a central midfielder, energetic, and wants to get forward and do that. But he has to be disciplined then and hang in. So just that you mentioned about people playing out of position, but watching the game on Friday was very similar to the week before against Carrick. They scored early, 3 minutes, they were 1-0 up, and I'll be honest, I was up in the box thinking we could be in for a long night here, you know, because our record against Glentoran is atrocious. But literally after 15 minutes in that game also, they pretty much down tools and hardly crossed the halfway line for the rest of the game. And you thought with the talent that's on that team, you know, they really should be, no disrespect to my home side, but I mean, you know, they really should be taking that game, going 2-3-0 at half time like they have done in previous years and just coasting for the rest of the game. But they really struggled. And I watched Warren Feeney on the sidelines. I was quite close to him on Friday night. And I just see, obviously, Stuart King's on the opposite sort of side. And you can see both of them have got enthusiasm and want to get their message across. But there was just a difference between the enthusiasm of Stuart King and the sort of touchline exasperation that there sort of looked like with Warren Feeney. Every time a ball wasn't going to where it was meant to go, hands in the air, the cap came off, and just things like that. And his message just doesn't seem to be getting across to his team at the minute. And whether, you know, we always talk about whether players are playing, but just the appointment itself, in my own personal opinion, you know, as soon as you start to get opposition supporters writing agent XYZ, you know, he's already got the tag of Agent Feeney, and you know, he's gone in there as an excellent field man. I know there's plenty of them about, but going in there as an excellent field player, it makes it doubly difficult, and you've got to hit the ground running. And unfortunately, at the minute, they just don't look as if they've got that mojo that they had last year, certainly at this time last year.
I'm hearing from Glentoran fans that there was Gary Hamilton songs being sang at Windsor Park. There's whispers being talked about. Could Paddy McLaughlin want to return to full-time management? This is Warren Feeney's job. He's the man in the driver's seat to try and turn this around. But the fans are frustrated, and there's a lot on the line for a club like Glentoran and trying to keep this full-time status. And you miss out on Europe, and all of a sudden, selling a player like Momentum is just paying off your lifestyle that you're currently living. So they're going to have to snap out of this quick. The games that are coming up, there's even more pressure on. They've got Lockall, who no one really wants to play at the minute. And then Glenavon, it feels easier, but that's a bogey team for them as well. In short, Feeney is feeling the pressure, and he's got to turn this round pronto. And what makes that result even worse for Glentoran fans is that you look at Linfield, and they look to be the complete opposite. Well-drilled. They look like they know exactly what they're trying to achieve. They've got energy out wide. They've got players making runs in the box. They look so assured in midfield. It's an area which I felt for a while didn't have enough drive or creativity or just a little spark that would take defence to attack. And when you have a striker in McKee, you can make a defender dance backwards toward his goal and panic. And Cooper is that mercurial player that can just pull anything out of the box. I often think of Linfield as this very boring, efficient team, but they have a few fireworks in there.
Yeah, belligerent best. I think they saw that the team they were playing against, you know, they had them down, and they really just didn't let up from the minute that first goal went in. And as I say, the bonus of the penalty just put it 2-0 early on. And really, as I said earlier, you didn't really see a way back. But certainly, you've mentioned it there. I think Linfield are the complete opposite of what we're looking at across the town, and that they've got players, I would say, 1 to 11. If you were doing one of those, pick your best team between the two, I wouldn't say it would be too far off, you know, 6-5 either way, whichever you wanted. But certainly in terms of structure at the minute, the team in blue certainly look as if they know what they're doing. I think Fitzpatrick hasn't hit the ground running as maybe the Blue Men wanted him to do. But I think he could be a big player coming up in these next few weeks. He seems to have started to get his mojo back in terms of getting himself in a position up top. And McKee's playing off him and the other two boys, Miller and Cooper Wade. You know, I could see Fitzpatrick starting to pick up a few goals in the next few weeks. And if he does, you know, he hasn't been scoring. Let's be honest, he hasn't been scoring. It's been down to McKee, Shields, the midfield and Cooper. If Fitzpatrick starts to find those boots and starts to find the net, then, you know, watch out the rest, you would have to say.
With Linfield in total control at the top of the league and in control of the game at Windsor Park, the pressure then swung towards Lorne. They're the chasers, and they were at Windsor Park playing the game at exactly the same time against the Crusaders side, who were building themselves, their confidence back up again. And it was a real ding-dong, back-and-forward game, plenty of chances, some near misses, some big saves, and Lorne had control of that game late on, thanks to a Levi Ives free kick. There's then a huge double save from Ferguson in the Lorne goal from Paul Heatley. I don't know how much Ferguson knew about it, but that looked...
I was going to say, you giving him a double save there, Peter? I'm not 100% sure about that.
Hits off him twice and away it goes. And that looked to have been a game-winning save. But Crusaders keep on the pressure. They keep on going for it. And they get the draw. Well-deserved draw if you're talking to many Crusaders fans. And it's Ben Kennedy who's able to pick the ball out of the air and dink it into the goal. He just has quality and skill. He's a match winner. And perhaps both teams will feel as though they're happy with this result, but Linfield must have went into the Windsor Park changing room just delighted, because that's 2 points lost for both those teams. These big games, there's a lot on the line in them. You got to believe that last season Lorne would have held out.
I think you're right there, Peter, in terms of just hanging on there at the end. I mean, and you mentioned terms of the Linfield. Probably Linfield supporters were probably checking their phones with 15 minutes to go, thinking, well, this game's done. You know, we can just watch our phones here in the Linfield Crusaders. And probably when Crusaders scored, that was probably the biggest cheer of the second half at Windsor, because 1-1 there is an absolutely perfect result for Linfield, having wrapped up the 3 points at Windsor. But yeah, crucial points. I mean, if this game... If you were looking at Lorne v Crusaders in April and it finished a 1-1 draw, you'd be thinking, oh, that's a catastrophe. It's a disaster for Lorne to drop 2 points here. But watching the game, it was an extremely tight game. I mean, definitely, you mentioned there about Crusaders. I mean, definitely deserved a point from that game. They pushed first half. They were very, very good first half. Lots of set-piece chances. And that paraphrase double save, I mean, he really knew nothing about it. Heatley should have buried that, let's be honest. I mean, he certainly the first one in particular, you know, the second one, it's a little bit harum scarum, but certainly the first chance he should have buried, and you know, and then the second one just hits him. But that could have just swung it then, and Lorne could have seen it out, like they probably did 9 times out of 10 last year, 1-0 with 10 minutes to go. But as you say, Kennedy just popping up there at the end, and just that little bit of class, didn't panic. As he got close to goal, he didn't panic, just gently nicked it over Ferguson into the net, and Crusaders got a very valuable point from that. And I think, you know, as I say, two points dropped from both sides, but it's a difficult one to call, because they're probably glad to get a point, both of them, from it. You know, when they look back at the end of the day, a point each, two good sides going at it, you know.
To focus on Lorne, looking at the way they've played this season, they only have the one loss. It's these four draws early on, which sees a substantial gap in 6 points after a first round of fixtures. You can pinpoint each one of these results of where it just didn't go their way. But this is the difference. You know, Linfield only have that one defeat this season, and they've been able to pretty much win every other game bar one. Lorne are letting these things slip. It just shows how efficient and how on top of your game. People say there's so little difference between these teams. It's about who can be the most consistent. And clearly, Linfield are. And many might say Lorne perhaps overachieved in how they got to the title last year. But they don't have a lot more room for a Lorne away loss, a draw in these big games. They need to find a ruthless side, I think, as we proceed into this next run.
Yeah, I've actually just jotted that down there. The four draws that they've had already out of 11 games, and you know, we're getting to the stage of, you know, draws almost don't count anymore. You know, it's got to be wins, especially in the big games. And I know you talked quite a lot last year about the top six playing against each other. That's what cost them Phil last year. And I know they've lost to Larne this year, but if you think if they had ifs and buts and maybes, but if Larne had a loss to Linfield that day, you'd be looking at a very, very big gap now. And I think Larne are getting to the stage now where you're getting in the last, I'm not saying last chance saloon, but you mentioned it there, they can't go away to a Dungannon and lose or you know, throwing points away against the bottom six possibly. You know, they can't afford to just throw points away. And sort of, for example, this coming Friday, you know, you can't go to Dungannon and not pick up 3 points now, because Linfield are just a wee bit monotonous at the minute and just picking up points. And you can't let that gap go too far. We've seen it over the years. If you let Linfield get away from you, they're very, very hard to pull back. No, nobody's saying Larne, I mean, geez, top drawer playing up top, you know what I mean? As I say, Andy Ryan goes out, you bring Lee Bonus in and he bags a hat-trick against Clavin in 10 minutes. That's what they can do, you know. They're, but it's just that little bit of creativity, maybe, that, you know, when it's nil-nil, they can pick up a goal. And to be fair, that's exactly what Levi Ives did on Friday. Free kick outside the box. You know, what he can do is left peg and just picks out the corner and gets them one up. And we've talked about it that, you know, maybe in season championship winning season last year, they'd have seen that through and picked up the 3 points. This year just doesn't seem to be going that way for them just at the minute, but you know, certainly wouldn't be running them out just yet.
To give Linfield their dues, and we've given them plenty of praise so far in this podcast, the one criticism they got last year is that they can duff all the bottom six sides, but it's getting the wins in the big games. So far they've been able to do that. That's why they're top. That's why they've only dropped one draw and one loss. It's because they've got the results against the top teams. And for a team which I hyped up quite a lot at the start of the season, Crusaders, the reason why they're a bit off is because they have lost these big clashes against Cliftonville and the likes. And getting a draw against Larne, they'll hope, is the start of them getting through the gears and back up and running at the same speed that they were earlier on at the just end of the summer.
Yeah, Crusaders, a good friend of mine's a Crusaders fan, and he goes and watches them fairly regular and just finds them a really hard team to fathom, you know what I mean? Because when we got to them early season, and the European stuff early season, they were really, really good early season. Got those couple of games against Rosenborg, really close to getting through to the next round, and we thought, okay, then hit the ground running in the league. And obviously, don't want to mention too many 9-0 scores, but I mean, that 9-0 demolition of Carrick just showed what they could do. I mean, yes, Carrick were down to 10 men, but the way they were ruthless and did not stop, it's sort of, you looked at it, and any team that wins 9, you think, well, they've got a ruthless streak in them. Didn't just settle for 4 or 5 and down tools. They went and got goal after goal after goal. But as you mentioned then, and it's just probably a little bit too simplistic to say, but, you know, the Callagher injury really didn't help. You know, as soon as he goes out, then there's a couple of losses come along, and then just that aberration against Cliftonville, no worse team to have that game. I think Stephen Baxter said it was one of his worst performances he's had in all the years he's been there, and really Cliftonville turned him over that night. And you just look at them then again and think, where's this team going? Having looked at them, and think this is a real title shot here, because as I say, my friend had a few quid on them early doors at a decent price, and the price was coming in every week they were winning, and you're thinking, I've got a good wager here, and then they sort of go off the rails again. But yeah, you know, picking up a point, a very deserved point at Larne, let's be honest, as I've mentioned a few times now, they definitely weren't out of sorts there, and could have nicked three. But you know, take a point there, maybe a good run of fixtures coming up now Friday night, if they can pick up another win and get back to winning ways at home. They were extremely solid at home. But again, it comes down to that boy that's going to put the ball in the net regularly for Crusaders. We've talked about it, you know, over the years.
They've had to reset a double loss in the same week of Cliftonville and Linfield will completely rock you as a squad. You lose a big experienced, big-time player in Calgary. I think this is a team who's trying to figure themselves out again. And you're right, scoring goals has been a bit of an issue that they are a team that can fire in loads. They've got lots of great attacking ability, but when it's a down and dogged all-out brawl or they're trying to chase the game, sometimes they just don't have that player up top that can make the difference. They are relying heavily on Lecky or the roll of the dice that is Jordan Owens in 2023. So for them, what benefits them is getting the goals and running away with it. They're not a team that wants to chase just yet. So a lot of eyes will be on Crusaders, how they react now in this next phase of the league. One team who, if you're going to rank them and give them a little grade for how they've achieved in their first 11 games, you've got to admit, Cliftonville have to have a big old A. Highest scores, joint highest scores in 28. The tightest defence, only conceded 5. The second best defence in the league is Larne, who only conceded 9. That's almost double the amount of goals that Cliftonville have conceded. I don't think you would have ranked Cliftonville as a team that has a really great defence, but they're keeping the ball out of the net. They're scoring for fun. I doubted them at the start of the season. And now they're currently the closest chaser up at the top of the league. They're 5 points still away from Linfield, but spearheaded by Ben Wilson and Joe Gormley, you can't cut out Cliftonville.
No, definitely not. And, you know, the unfortunate thing for Cliftonville is those 5 goals, a couple of them came against Linfield, unfortunately, and they lost that game. And that's obviously the difference between the two teams at the top there. But otherwise, you have to give them their dues. They've been excellent all season. And, you know, these front two, as I talked about earlier in the pod there, you know, these two are starting to, Gormley and Wilson are starting to bring back memories of Gormley and Boyce in their heyday when they were scoring 40, 50 goals in a season to win leagues. That's kind of what you got to do these days, you know, and get two good guys up front. It's been Curran over the last couple of years. McDonald's been there for a bit, but Gormley's just, he's just the sticking plaster in there, isn't he? And he put Ben Wilson in there now. And just a little side issue that I don't really like people talking about this guy leaving in January and things like that, you know. Just because he's doing well, you know, suddenly other teams are going to be looking at him. Let's keep him in the league. Let's keep him at Cliftonville. Let him see what he can do for an entire season. And if he can win a league title at Solitude with Gormley in tow, that would be your Philip to say, right, there you go, I've done my bit for you guys and now I can move on. But just this talk about somebody leaving and halfway through a season, I'm not a big fan of that, you know. And you know, he seems to be enjoying it. You only enjoy your football when you get 14 odd goals in a season, you know. And I think the two of them have scored 12 in the last 5 games. You know, I'm talking about the fantasy league, I'm doubling up bonus points for hat tricks for both of them over the past week or so, you know. And just they've been sensational. And although, you know, looking at the game on Saturday, Duncannon, I'll probably come to Duncannon in a second, but Duncannon hit the bar in the first 10 minutes and really could have gone one up there. And obviously we don't know what happens then, but the first chance, I think it was the first shot that they had, Cliftonville, and header in the far post for Wilson scores. And immediately then Duncannon's old feelings come back to haunt them again, and Cliftonville just cut through them. But Wilson was clinical. But if you haven't seen it, just nip back and see Joe Gormley's goal. He just put some salt in them chips, you know what I mean? Just beautiful. Just lifted it over the keeper. And such a finish, you know. And then a goal at the end to make it 5-0 and an easy win for Cliftonville. And, you know, but, you know, they got to get that first goal, and that's crucial. Once you get the first goal in those types of games, it opens everything up.
And Dungannon at home in the league and cup was a fixture that completely undid them. And they exercised those ghosts with an absolute thumping. Dungannon, they've never been a team over the past few years who have come out defensively strong. We'll talk about teams at the bottom later. They now are very much there, floating around in that mire at the bottom. It's a poor day at the office for a team who tried to take it to Cliftonville and just got caught out again and again. And they'll not be the only team that gets caught out by this Cliftonville team, but a team in North Belfast who needed to get off to a good start, get a bit of confidence in them again, and that's what they have. They've got a team who are working really hard for each other, But they are getting, as you said, they're getting those goals that changes these games. And they now go into the next phase really believing in themselves. And the Reds and the Blues will be meeting sooner rather than later. And simply, if they can keep outscoring these teams, they'll stay up in the mix for many more weeks and months to come.
Yeah, and sometimes, you know, when we're talking about, no, you kind of comes with the territory of being a pod hoster here. You've got to do a preview, and comes with the territory. We're guessing at the start of a season. We are guessing, and pretty much the majority of people looked at Cliftonville and said, lost their standout manager. He's gone towards the end of the season. Bit of friction in the camp. What's going to happen with their major players? Are they going to hang around? They went after every manager under the sun, it seemed. Nobody wanted the job. Don't want this, don't want that. Ended up with Jim Magilton, who, let's be honest, wasn't popular. Let's be brutally honest. The Cliftonville fans weren't overly happy. In the similar vein to the guy at the Oval, they weren't very popular. But it's amazing how those feelings can dissipate with a couple of wins and the team looking pretty decent on the pitch and solid at the back, scoring goals up front, good to watch. I don't hear too many Cliftonville supporters now saying, you know, we don't want that guy, Jim Matilda. It might come back, it could come back, but we kind of forget that this guy has coached at a very, very high level in England. You know, we kind of forget that, you know, it wasn't at your premiership clubs and totally, you know, the high prem, but I mean, he's been at a high level and he kind of knows the game inside out. So, I mean, he knows a thing or two, and he's clearly got his team at Solitude tight at the back and scoring goals up front. You can't really ask for much more than that.
A manager who will want a couple of games to put some bad form to rest is Corey Inns, Oran Kearney. He hosted a struggling Glenavon side who, despite getting a first result just by the skin of their teeth in the League Cup against Dergview midweek, go to the Corian showgrounds and get a shellacking. Corian, when they're scoring goals and they're passing around the pitch, looks so brilliant and looks so free-flowing, and they can do that when they're able to take out that opposing team's attacking display. And they must have been panicking ever so slightly when Glenavon took the lead after 6 minutes, but they kept to their task, they kept doing what they were doing, and the goals flooded in from the 44th minute. Josh Carson gets a wondrous free kick to even things up, and then particularly later on, thanks to goals from Conor McKendry and Matthew Shevlin, get a 4-1 victory for the Bandsiders. Should have been 5-1, actually, if anybody's seen this Lee Lynch strike. That
I haven't written down. Here's a talking point, Peter.
That bounces down, you know. So they were throwing it in. My big question is, surely defences in this league have seen what Conor McKendry does. Why do they let him have so much space charging into the box on his left foot? It doesn't matter that he's just outside the box. He can ping it in from there. Do not give him that space. But every time you do, you will get punished.
Yeah, you see a lot of times when players are coming on as substitutes, the old flip pads, the iPads these days, showing people where to go. Surely the iPad in the Glenavon dressing room that day should have been, do not let McKendry shoot. Because that's pretty much what he does. You know what I mean? He pings the ball in there. Two lovely goals. The first one with left peg, but then the second one, sort of a slalom in, dips his shoulder and puts it away. But yeah, maybe pre-game there was, you know, really strangely, there was maybe more pressure on the home manager, you know, than the away. You know, it's maybe a few free hits for Steve McDonald. Glenavon just getting in there after the departure. But serious pressure there for Oran Kearney, and you weren't really expecting that this season. I mean, two heavy, heavy defeats. And his comments after the Cliftonville in particular were really quite scathing. He got stuck into his players for down and tools, really, and that's probably the worst thing you can say as a manager about your team. But he really got stuck into them that night. And then a 4-0 defeat as well. And, you know, another defeat, as you mentioned, there are 6 minutes gone, third free kick of the weekend, over the wall, into the net, and you think, could this be another one here? But yeah, they stuck to their plans, and they're very difficult at home, you know, when with that sort of surface, they can ping the ball about. And you know, as I say, they've got a couple of guys there that can ping the ball from outside the box, and one that certainly can score goals in the box, and Shevlin, and he got the third, and that pretty much killed the game. But Just you mentioned on the Lee Lynch thing. Obviously, if you haven't seen it, it does appear to go over the line, and people have been talking about the dread, and we need technology to see this and stuff. And I just every time my heart sort of sinks a wee bit that we start talking about technology, because every other country in the world now is complaining about technology. Can you just imagine if we had that sort of carry on in our league? It's bad enough as it is sometimes, the Irish league.
You can let it slide when it's a 4-1 win. If it's a bit closer, you're going to be more upset. No replays here. But for Coleraine, look, it's hard to get really excited about them right now. You've seen how low they were last week. Win at home against one of the real strugglers this season, a team that's trying to find their identity under a new manager. It's clear McDonald doesn't know what his best side is, and they'll want to get their own confidence the same way Coleraine. This is a confidence game. He'll want to build these players up. They get away with it in the League Cup just midweek, but I don't know if technology would help this team or not. But if you do want to win some games, I would recommend keeping 11 players on the pitch, and that's something Ballymena have only been able to do 7 out of their 11 games. They shot themselves in the foot once again at the Showgrounds, where Newry came up and took some vital 3 points. It was the worst defense in the league in Newry City against the worst attack in Ballymena, and I don't know what 2-0 to Newry says about that matchup, but we say how these games are massive at the bottom of the table, and this just gave Newry a boost. And this is what I think that Newry will have. They do look sketchy going back towards their own goal. They do look rough at the back, but they have Sally and other players out wide that they can get these goals in these games at the bottom of the table. And now that Ballymena finally played every team in the league, because they had to go through a devil's gauntlet at the start through all the top six teams, they've now played all the bottom six, the other five teams in that area of the pitch, and all they've got is 2 wins, and not the most convincing 2 wins either. And there's plenty of season still to go, but it's just not looking good for Ballymena at all.
Yeah, I mean, it's just a desperate result for them, and and just never really seemed to get into the game at all. I mean, Newry seemed to boss the whole game, and really just one chance for Westendorf in the second half, and he hit the keeper from about 6 yards. But apart from that, nothing really going forward for Ballymena, and just the defending for the first goal. I mean, it's just a hopeful ball into the box, and the Newry Sally gets up and jumps for it, and the Ballymena guy just doesn't. He just doesn't, and he heads it into the net from 4 yards. And Sean O'Neill just sort of said, "Well, what chance do I have with that?" And that says everything at the minute. And as you mentioned there, a couple of red cards in the game, and I don't know where they're going to get goals from. I mean, Westendorf come in from Larne, and I watched them at Carrick Rangers a few weeks back when Ballymena got that win you mentioned. He got the penalty that day, and he looked a real handful for 60, 70 minutes. He really did, but really tired the last 15, 20 minutes. I know he was only maybe coming into the team, but they need him for 90 minutes, and going flat out for 90 minutes to give them that focal point to play off. But at the minute, I just don't see where the goals are coming from. I mean, 2 red cards in the game. First one for Corey Burns. I mean, yeah, I could see that because the ball's beating him down the lane. Again, it looks like a second yellow. That's fair enough, maybe, but then I don't know whether you've seen the second one, which is Westendorf and Ryan McGivern. And I'm a big American football fan, and that sort of looked like he was selling it a wee bit, the contact. He sold the contact, as they would say, and fell on the floor and sort of turned around, and imaginary card, and McGivern was sent off. And there was another little bit that really made me chuckle, that Westendorf then proceeded to celebrate the red card in front of the Ballymena fans, as if we've scored here.
Well, Ballymena do not have a lot to cheer about. We talk about how Cliftonville have only conceded 5 goals. Ballymena have only scored 5 goals, and 2 of them, thanks to the head of Colin Coates. They have to try and find goals from Westendorf or McMurray or Carfrail, who seems to be back out injured again. So there's a few square pegs and round holes. They are just completely missing confidence, flow to their play, and they have an absolute mountain. I'm actually, those wins is keeping a lot closer than what it feels like I've seen performances are. Like, they are only 1 point off Glenavon and Dungannon, but Ballymena are coasting right now thanks to a penalty against Carrick and a last minute winner pretty much against Dungannon. So the performances aren't there and the results kind of just have been there. So if we, once again, we stop the table right now after everyone's played each other, it's not looking good. So huge amount of work to be done. You've got to believe that they'll need a couple of enforcements to change it for them. Newry, yeah. And Newry's building on their own work in the transfer window, goals there from Adam Sally and Lee Newell. You can see that team from O'Connor and Carroll. Like, they've freshened up their squad and they're not going absolute gangbusters, but they look to have a lot more about them than some of those teams just below them.
Yeah, I mean, obviously the second goal won that game for them, and they're just keeping their head above the parapet at the minute by picking up the odd win every other sort of third week, maybe when they're playing the teams in and around. And we always talk about that bottom six table, you know, teams in and around, and they're just picking up wins. I mean, the win at the start of the season away at Carrick was a huge win that just got them off and running, but they're picking up points here and there and just keeping themselves out of that bottom two at the minute. Yes, they're getting some heavy defeats, sure, but that doesn't matter. I mean, manager will not worry about that, losing six to Linfield and all that kind of stuff. If they're finishing 10th in the table, he'll be as pleased as punch if they pick up enough points to finish 10th and stay in the league for sure. So that they're just doing, and you know, a couple of signings you've mentioned there, they do seem as if they've got a few goals in them, whereas the team on the end of the defeat this weekend, just at the minute right now, doesn't. But, you know, I mean, Jim Irvine's going to give it a right good go at Ballymena. I know him from his time at Carrick, and he doesn't quit. And, you know, it's a tough old gig to start with, you know, for him. Being thrown in at the deep end is a tough job, but this one's like a Mount Everest, I think. But, you know, knowing him from Carrick days, he won't quit. And if it's his first job. If Jim Irvine was to come out of this keeping Ballymena in the league, what a first year that would have been. You know what I mean? It's not as if he's got to go and win something. Nobody's expecting him to go and finish top six. But if he can get himself, you know, it's so toughest job, and if he can get it done and come out the other side, it would really, really sort of keep him going for the next few seasons, I would think. But Newry, unfortunately for Ballymena, just too good on the day.
It would be an immense achievement, and the more I've been talking to people in recent weeks, they're starting to really get their head around. You know, we saw a big team in Portadown and the stadium they have and the crowd that they have go down last season, and I think just the recent success of Ballymena, a lot of people just couldn't see it. They're like, yeah, they might struggle, but the idea that they'd actually go down, and it is early doors and they could go on a big run, but I would be surprised if I'm sitting here talking before the last 2-3 games of the season saying Ballymena have done it, they're safe, and they're sorted. And a matchup between two teams who look like they are going to be safe and sorted this season, even after one round of games. The game of the weekend, Loughgall against Carrick Rangers. Can I watch you every week? 3-4 down at Lakeview Park. Just fantastic. There was goals, there was red cards. This was end-to-end stuff. Just an absolute delight. Let's roll out the cliche. This was an amazing advert for the Irish League, if that's what we're going to say. What was your favourite goal and why?
It was a great game. You know, I mean, we talked about before the game trying to get the first goal at Loughgall and then maybe sitting in. But as soon as you go one down again early, which Carrick have been quite adept at doing this year, but and we'll probably talk about it in a second, a lot of character in this team now. And came back and they played a 15-20 minute spell. Really, really top drawer. You know, the front three were causing problems all the way. You know, Perkis Allen and Mackie Latus just really, really good up top, down the channels. And Allen just sitting in the box. So, you know, they got 3-1 up and then started to throw it away in the second half. But yeah, my favourite goal would have been the fourth goal. because for the only reason that Danny Perkins, again, excellent down the wing. And when the ball comes into the box, you're thinking, okay, Curtis Allen's going to be there. But it was only Curtis Allen there. There was no lock all player within 5 yards of him. He timed to take it down, and I thought he was going to get down on his knees and head it in on the old schoolboy thing. He had that much time. I don't know where the fullback had gone or whatever, but he had so much time just, and he literally just tapped it into the net for 4-2. But again, to be fair, the lock all didn't throw the towel in, but 15 minutes to go, Ben McKee with the sort of standard goal he scores now, getting it right wing, slaloms past and sneaks it in at the near post like he did against Lorne. This time, though, it was only a consolation for Loughall, but an absolutely terrific game. Two sides going at it, you know, really going at it. And, you know, 7 goals, as you mentioned, the red card as well. And just Irish League pretty much at its best.
And it was a game full of goals where these are not big thumps from deep and there's a header back and forward. These are teams that are playing the ball down on the deck, making runs, going out wide, finding a player in the box. Like, this was a complete exhibition of attacking football, and two teams who looked to be happy to have the ball at their feet and to chase defenders. And Danny Perkins is clearly having a moment right now, and it makes this situation in East Belfast even worse, thinking, you know what, we could do with a player like that in our team. And look, Carrick Rangers had a torrid start to the season. They've now started to get some form of consistency, if you can say 2 wins in a row are that. But, you know, you take down a top six side at home, you are able to hang on against one of the informed teams in the league and Loughall down away from home. That must be exactly what Stuart King has been looking for. Often in bad patches, you've got a real decision to make. Do you trust the process, or do you tinker and change? Following it with closer detail, what do you think's happened here? Do you think Stuart King has been able to find what's going wrong, or has all that training and all that strategy finally started to click with the players?
Just before he can get into it, Stuart King has been fantastic for the club. I mean, they took a chance on him a few years back, and it might be something that other clubs, it won't work at every club, but his hunger is his greatest talent, his hunger to do well for himself and therefore the club, and just the decisions that he makes in games. He is quite tactical, you know. I mean, a lot of people say, oh, you know, he's coming from PIL or Intermediate League and doesn't really know. I tell you what, he played at high level and he knows the game and he knows his players. And the environment around Carrick Rangers now, I think, is the big difference since they came up. He's got them playing much more football now. He's got the players to do it now. I mean, we're attracting players now that we wouldn't even dream of. And, you know, Joe Crowe coming in the midfield. Yes, he's got booked in pretty much 90% of the games this year, but he's a fantastic player. And, you know, you talk about Danny Perkins coming from Glentoran. Obviously, he has as well. He was surplus to the requirements. But at the game last week, I did talk to a few Glentoran sort of fans after the game, and every single one of them mentioned Perkins. You know, he had a fantastic game against Glentoran. And look, he was surplus to requirements. They had a plethora of forwards. You mentioned McMenamin, the two Donnellys. You know, there were you know, Roy was there as well. And he just wasn't getting game time. He was full time. And here's the difference, I think, at Carrick Rangers. They were able to go to him. Stuart King went to him and said, look, I know you're going to be coming out of full-time football, but this is a good environment to come to. You'll enjoy your football and have a not a laugh. Laugh's not what I'm trying to say, but you know what I mean? Enjoy what you're doing. And that's exactly what he's doing. He's playing with a proverbial smile on his face. And he this season, I don't want to get over the top here, but he's as good as I've seen playing an amber shirt this season and for any season. He has been fantastic. He put a performance in. Now, I know I'm going to say it was Myola Park in the League Cup, but he put a performance in that night that was just out of this world. He was running the game. And actually, Stuart King had to shout at him with 10 minutes to go, saying to calm down, relax, because he wanted him to be fit for the weekend, because he was running into the corners and just doing exactly what he'd be doing when it was 4-1 with 10 minutes to go. But that's Danny Perkins. He has been fantastic and a breath of fresh air at Carrick Rangers this year. And the other two guys are now buying into it, and throw in Emmett McGuckin, who's just become a father, so isn't playing at the minute. Four guys up top now who are quality, and I do mean that, they are quality up top.
And a tidy new acquisition at the back as well. Shows intent.
It does. And that again is the difference that we're looking at now, the level of player that we're bringing in. You're referring to, I presume, Lewis McKinnon at the back.
Yes.
Who's come in. not Stevie Gordon, who's just back as well. But no, Lewis McKinnon, who's come in from Rangers, was playing in the youth teams at Rangers and has decided to come back. And yeah, look, you know, being able to go and get a player like that, just as you mentioned, is just a sign of where we're at. And you get feelings about it, and this is my own personal opinion, just being about the club. You get a feeling that we've done this for 2 years. We've been sitting around ninth, sort of eighth, ninth, tenth, and being comfortable the last two seasons. You would say we're not comfortable at the minute because we're one win away from the bottom two, but it feels different. It just feels different right now. I think the quality of football we're playing, getting it down the channels with Perkis and Maculaitis, with Curtis Allen up top, with the ability to change it if it's not working. As I say, we're starting to get players back. Cal Cherry's back. Stevie Gordon's at the back, is back. And you know, we've got a settled team. And the two fullbacks are excellent as well, Curtis Forsyth and Ben Tilney. So, I mean, we're waxing lyrical here. You keep sort of telling me that we're going to win the league. But they are good to watch now. I have to say they are good to watch. And the last piece in the jigsaw, possibly, and I probably shouldn't say this, but is to try and get the Carrick people out to watch their team now, because they're a good watch.
Let's do a bit of catch up of what's been going down with this podcast over the past few weeks. I know that I've spent two podcasts either looking ahead or reviewing this big document that Niffl produced, and then right in the middle I had an interview with Jared Lawler, but I just thought I would come back to it as I've had the week to listen through it all again. I've had the feedback from a lot of people who have checked it out. I think a lot of you guys really appreciated the chance to hear from the horse's mouth and Jared Lawler about what they are looking to do with this document. And I thought many of you said you were won over by the fact that he answered some of the questions that we were keen to find out. A few things, actually, listening back to it, that stood out to me, because when you do it the first time, you hear some stuff, and then once you do it again, you're like, hold on a second, this means this and that means that. And actually, a lot of people picked up on things as well and put it to me, and I just thought I would share it here and now. One of them being, and I was thinking during the maths when he was talking about this idea of shares in Niffl, and if there was to be a vote and there being 50 shares, and I kind of thought, well, hold on, that doesn't make sense in all the leagues. And of course, if you add up the PIL, the Championship, the Premiership, and then of course the Women's Premiership as well, Niffl and the IFA, you get your 50. So some people were like, hold on a second, do teams with the women's team in the Premiership potentially get two votes? I haven't asked, but I actually assume that probably is the case. Saying that, it's just my belief. I can't see an actual Niffl vote like that being the thing that decides what we do moving forward. And there was no commitment in the interview that was going to be the case. But the other side of that was when I was asking him, okay, does insert Premier Intermediate League team here have exactly the same say and vote as one of the top teams? And he said, in the current form, that is the case. And then I even asked him about the Sunday football defeat, where you wouldn't need permission or agreement from both teams to move a fixture. That was defeated, and how many reports are that was defeated by teams in junior football. But some people said to me, so what if the ambition and what if the wants of the top teams in the Irish League are completely opposed to the teams in the bottom of Niffl? How do we square this circle, and how do we deal with this conflict? And I think moving forward, that is going to be something we will come back to. What do we do if there is a big split between what Linfield Nor, Glentoran, the top teams in this country want to do, and teams lower down in the division? Because that's a conflict, that's a central conflict, and they could be pulling in two very different directions. And what's going to happen?
I think that's the question that isn't being answered anywhere because they don't want to cross that Rubicon right now, because it opens up the very real possibility that, you know, as you mentioned, the full-time teams at the top of the league, let's say there's a split in the Premier League or Premiership already with the top six and the bottom six, but they're on the same platform at the minute. But if you're talking about guys in PIL who are part-time, you know, they may have completely different aspects on this than a guy who's a full-time footballer can, and their job could, it's their job, you know, and this is what they do for a living. The guy who's playing for a team down in PIL, this is, for want of a better expression, for most of them a hobby, you know what I mean? And they want to play it at different times possibly and things like that. So yeah, it's something. What I would say is probably between now and any so-called vote or whatever way they're going to work it, there's likely to be some sort of negotiation going on here in terms of, you know, what we can give to you as a PIL or an intermediate club or a championship club. I would say that behind the scenes, there's a bit of work going on there as to how it's going to benefit the teams that maybe don't. That's how negotiation works. And a lot of teams will say, oh, we don't fancy that. And then, you know, it's a wee bit like when somewhere comes to build on land and they want to buy a land and they have to negotiate with the homeowners, you sort of negotiate and a lot of homeowners, I don't want that. Even if they do, they sort of say, well, I don't want that, so I can get a wee bit out of it. So there may be a wee bit of that give and take coming towards that. The one you're probably talking about there is the summer football, you know, and that'll be the major question coming over the next few years. But, you know, you're starting to get the media sort of rigmarole and rolling on it. National manager coming out now and talking about, you know, we shouldn't be calling it summer football, changing the narrative a little bit that we play in that sort of space anyway. Things like that, they're sort of pushing it towards a move possibly. But, you know, personally speaking, obviously I have another sport that I'm quite involved in, and I think it would be a real hammer to cricket in this country if summer football came in. But that's just a personal opinion. If it happens, it happens, you know. There's not a great deal we can do about it. But, you know, this coming Friday could be a point in view that, you know, I know it's not summer football, but there's no other football on Friday. So, and there's a full programme. So let's see what comes on Friday. Nothing else is happening. And that was a big thing Jared was saying about moving to summer football, that there's no other sort of contesting games on. You know, there's no Premier League. There's none on Friday. So let's see. I know it's not specific, but it'd be an interesting sort of thing to look at and see how many people come out and watch the games. Having said that, there's no massive games, like no big two derby on Friday. But it'd be interesting to compare and contrast over years gone by as to how many people come out on a Friday night to watch the games.
It's all about attention. And this is the pulse that I'll be keen on. I think clearly the answer NIFL would want is that for everyone a part of NIFL to come to an agreement and to walk forward holding hands. But in the backdrop of the very much rejected European Super League, and even if we were to go all the way back to how the Premier League was formed, it's all about club power. And as much as nobody wants to say these teams can just do what they want despite of what teams lower in the pyramid want to do, it's how we find that balance. So that's what I'm really going to keep my eyes on now. You want to bring everybody together so we can find some sort of agreement, all as one. But if at some point these teams that are pumping millions of pounds, in the case of Larne, into how they run their football, at some point they'll feel as though we if they really want to do what they want to do, and it is teams that are on a completely different planet to them in regards to expenditure and how they run things, they will start to be really asking some very difficult questions of what they need to do, because they want to progress, they want to move forward. What options are there to them?
And you know what question that opens up? Yeah, you know what question that opens up then? If the top six start to say, well, that's exactly what you're talking about, how the Premier League came about. You know, the lower clubs in the 92 said, we don't want this. And they just said, well, we're going to go now. We're going to go. And they went. So that then opens up the question of a top six saying, well, I'll tell you what, you're not doing what we want to do. And then you're into the rooms of an All-Ireland League and things like that. We'll join. You know, and things like that sort of become much more possible than they would at the minute. If the likes of a Larne, Linfield, Glentoran, the revenue is being stopped, for want of a better phrase, by a team that's in PIL, which is why I say I think there will be a little bit of negotiation to make sure that the clubs come on board and say, if you are going to do these things, let's do it at least with the sort of preface of a agreement and a unity as we go ahead. You know, even if it's not real, you know, at least we're putting out there in the social media, which is a huge thing these days, that it's together.
Well, we've got plenty of discussions still to go down. As Jared said in an interview, in the next 6 months, they're going to sit down, and it feels as though everything is pretty much up for discussion at the minute. One thing that's getting an interesting bit of discussion online and beyond is etiquette of people in your line of work, Mr. McCalmont. You being the people, the voice of God in these Irish League stadiums. Obviously, that's something you do at your beloved Taylor's Avenue.
Yeah.
What have you boys been up to this past week?
Oh, yeah, we've been hitting the headlines this week. Jeez. Yeah, I'm public announcer at Carrick Rangers, so that's my Saturday job usually when I pop down there. And yeah, I suppose we're the voice that everybody hears when you go to a game pre-game. When I'm doing a game, I'm trying to keep it sort of, you know, get as many people in the ground as you can early enough. You know, obviously other clubs have got social clubs and things like that. But yeah, we've hit the headlines a wee bit this week. A few boys have been on the old, I can't even call it Twitter now. Do you call it Twitter? Do you call it X or whatever? It was copyrights and all that sort of stuff. But that social media platform I'm talking about anyway, saying that, in particularly the game on Friday night, that I know the guy very well, the Linfield guy who does the PA. And when Chris Shields was coming up to take the penalty, they were sort of commenting that the ball had just about reached the line and just about gone over the line when our favourite PA announcer came on and was announcing, look, oh, goal for Linfield. He was a little bit early. And then I sort of had a wee bit of a look at that over the games at the weekend. And Cole Rain was very similar. They hadn't actually got to do their celebration yet. And people were coming back saying, yeah, I want to celebrate. I don't want some guy coming on and shouting at me. And so, yeah, just a little bit of etiquette in terms of when we should be celebrating. Should we have specific songs? I know Linfield did for a while. You know, I know you covered that a while back, I think, about, you know.
Am I right in thinking that, like, sometimes Linfield would have certain songs for certain players scoring goals? Or was that just completely
I thought about that at Carrick, to be honest with you, because I had one player, and I thought it was a really good one. When Alex Gawn was playing at Carrick, I thought, I'm going to put Deacon Blue on here, which was Real Gawn Kid. And I'm going to have it on, and I'm going to have it ready to go. But unfortunately, Gawny didn't hit the net that often, so I never really got to play it.
I kind of love that as an idea. Like, it's the reverse wrestler. Yeah. It's like every time you score a goal, you pump out the tune. That's that player's kind of a banger. Yeah. A part of me absolutely hates the whole song being played once a player scores. But here, at different strokes, I kind of like the weather. It chops and changes. I remember the Cole Rain used to play some song every time that they scored. And I remember they scored once in a game that I was at, and then it was chalked off, and like the goal was chalked off, and the song played, and it was very quickly just faded out. Whoop! Nope, sorry, that didn't count. No, didn't the Glens have that song that they played every time? It's like, it's not really like a contemporary song, but it would just be, I don't know what it would be. It's probably escaping me right now, but you know, it wasn't like the Prodigy. It was.
My big problem with it was, obviously, when I started at Carrick, we were sort of fritting between Premiership and Championship, and when we were at the Premiership and obviously struggling down the bottom at times, you know, when you're playing a goal when you're 4-0 down, but you're still expected to play the tune, and you think, hang on.
Well, going back to American football, that's when, like, I don't know, Tampa Bay have like lost by like 40 points, and they're like, well, we've scored a touchdown. Fire the cannon.
let's not bother
yeah,
so that's why I'm not a big fan of playing the tune as you score. I like to give the supporters their own sort of celebration and then maybe do a little bit but that's just my bag.
So yes, when you're at Taylor's Avenue and you're listening to the voice being either very excited that Carrick are beating your team, or they're not so excited when Player X has just scored his fourth goal of the day. Hey, you'll know where you recognize it from. And
you know who to blame.
And one of the games where you could be hearing said goals is, well, obviously, at Taylor's Avenue, where Linfield come down. And we remember last year, it was a lot more warmer when that result went down, that huge result for Carrick at Taylor's Avenue against Linfield. That is the game that sums up for me that torrid start to the season, that huge big European hangover. There's no signs of that right now. Maybe this warm weather that we're seeing recently in October could inspire the players to do the same again. Linfield may be loving life, scoring the goals, but when Danny Perkis is looking around and all these other players are in decent form as well, this could be a tricky wee tie on Friday night. All of these games being played on Friday the 13th. Friday the 13th hits even harder when it's on October. So you know how at Christmas, every like few weeks beforehand, like just Santa walks out with the boys. Like I want like some big, I don't know, scary ghoul holding hands with the boys walking down the pitch. You know, oh, it's Jason. Oh, look at that, boy. Kids. It's Jason Voorhees walking down with the Lorn captain. How scared are you by Linfield coming to town? Or do you think you're going to give Linfield a bit of a trick rather than a treat of 3 points?
Nice. Nobody's going to say, you know, we're not scared of Linfield coming to town, but you know, we kind of took the monkey off the back last year with that win, and I just think we're in a good nick at the minute. You know, we're on form, but look, we can throw in a few shockers at Lockshore as well. You know, I mean, we've lost to Newry, we've lost to Ballymena already this year, and obviously a couple of big teams have torn us apart, but just at the minute, I think we've got a good setup. We're starting to get a few players back, and there's good competition for places. You know, nobody's ever going to say your favourites against Linfield at home. Never, you know. But I fancy us to score for sure. It's whether or not we can keep them out at the back. But I actually think we'll get it. We'll get a result on Friday night. Obviously, a couple of weeks back, and it might be something that comes up yet, but should have done by now. But a couple of Linfield guys are in the under 21 setup, so I thought maybe the game might not take place, but Chris McKee thinks certainly in it, and I'll be pleased that he's not turning out on Freddie for sure at his hometown club, and you know, that's a loss for Linfield if he can't play.
And fingers crossed that doesn't change, or that will date my podcast more than it usually is. Just going to grab a little note, take McKee out of my fantasy team. Thanks for that little bit of street knowledge there for me. You know, we talk about these teams going to these small little grounds and how will they deal with you know, that pitch. But I think with Taylor's Avenue, they're totally justified in bringing that up. I've seen Linfield have not the best of days when they go to pitches like Warren Point and stuff like that. And Taylor's Avenue is a bit tighter, and it is, you know, that bumpy downhill pitch. You know, anything can kind of happen. And I can see it being one of those games where Joel Cooper isn't as free-flowing as he wants to be. Are they able to find space in the box? Can Stuart King do a number on Linfield and then attack that weakness with all this brilliant forward players that you have and get the goals to win the game? I'm going to be bold. I think it's ridiculous anybody betting on anything that isn't a Linfield win. But I'm going to go for a score draw, 1-1.
Yeah, I'm going 2-2. 2-2.
Hey, give me a 4-4 and we'll be delighted. I like all the goals, please. And we'll all watch Carrick Rangers. And I definitely like Carrick's all orange. Like,
good point.
Like
good,
I know the black point, shorts, yeah, are common, but I like the all amber. It's sweet.
You know,
it's good look.
It sounds really petty. It sounds really, really petty. But we changed that kit last year. Stuart actually was quite adamant about changing both the home and away kit. He changed the away kit to a very sort of vibrant blue last year, but he wanted to change. We were quite orange the year before, but he changed it to amber. It's very Wolves sort of look now. I know it sounds silly, but kits can make a difference at times, you know what I mean? And the away kit, he wanted to be a very vibrant blue. I know we go back to the Fergie thing about, you know, changing kits, but just little things like that he's brought in over the, just that little bit of, I hate the word professional, it's not professionalism, but you know what I mean? Just attention to detail about and changing kits. And yeah, no black shorts on Saturday there. It did look quite neat.
Cruise, host, Ballymena are obviously having an awful time of it these days. They did get a result at Seaview last season when no one was getting results at Seaview. But when you're not scoring goals at home, scoring goals away from home is going to be even harder. Down a Friday night. I know Crusaders aren't the all-singing, all-dancing team from early in the season, but you've got to believe they'll have enough to get the goals here against Ballymena. I'm probably predicting a 3-4 nil here.
Yeah, probably looking down to six games here. It's, and I actually looked at it and said it's one of those weekends. I nearly said weekend, but a Friday night, a game week, if you want to call it that, where the sort of proposed top six are all playing the bottom six, as you would have said at the start of the season. And this is the only one, actually, that I can see a clear win. You know, the others, I can see the bottom six, in inverted commas, team sort of giving the top six team a bit of a run. But here, I really can't see this. And poor Sean O'Neill going back to his old haunt. And I think he could be busy in the Seaview on again. And on Friday night, I think Crusaders could rack up a few here.
Can you see Lorne retaliating with a big win at Stagmore Park? They like these Friday night games, not always away from home, but we all remember how these two teams fared when they met at the very start of the season. Dungannon, the goals have dried up ever so slightly, particularly against that game against Ballymena, but Thomas Maguire has been a spark out wide, even though it hasn't totally meant that he's got the goals. But you've got to believe that Lauren are going to have the attacking outlet. Dungannon conceded four against Lauren last time. They were just lucky to get late ones to pull it back. And in the way their defence has been playing, you'll think Lauren could have another field day despite being away from home.
Yep. I think that first game of the season was pretty much dictionary definition Dungannon. Torn apart for quite a lot, but then just that little bit of quality at the end got them a draw. I think a big difference for Dungannon could be getting Keelan Marin back. He missed the game at Cliftonville. If you get him back, not just because he comes back in, because I'm pretty sure that Ethan McGee had to go back into the back four on Saturday, and that's a big miss for the midfield. I think he's the quality player in the bottom. I've used it a lot of times in the bottom six. I think he's the quality player in the bottom six sides. It stands out, and Swifts fans will not thank me for saying it, but I think there'll be a lot looking at him in January, possibly even to come along, because he just looks like a quality player in midfield. He's got time on the ball. So getting him back in the midfield and getting Marin back is a 2-win for Dungannon there. They get their defender back, but they also get to move their quality midfielder in. Having said that, I still think there's frailties at the back. Lorne will win, but you know, I've gone for a 3-1 to Lorne.
I love that little Ethan McGee shine. Yes, a player that I also would like to hook myself onto that bandwagon. Nice little player out wide for sure. Could this be the shock game for McDonald to announce his arrival? This once again doesn't feel like, if it's just by how many, Glenavon have struggled at the back again this season. At home can help them ever so slightly, but Cliftonville will put their foot on the gas from the first minute, and they could be home and hosed by half time based on recent form.
Yeah, if you were to pick one team that Glenavon didn't want to play right now, it was Cliftonville, because as you mentioned earlier, no goals really conceded, only five over the season, and a couple of them against the bigger teams. They haven't really conceded against the lower sides, and Glenavon are not scoring goals. So I think this is the worst team to be playing against at the minute, you know. And I just think Glenavon have got to go right back to basics now and just start from the back and start getting some clean sheets and picking up points, even if it's a 0-0 draw. Just start getting it. If you nick a goal, I think they've only got one clean sheet all season. And I think I'm not a coach, I'm Steve McDonald's again in charge now, but for me personally I would just go back and say, right lads, let's keep it really tight at the back, let's not concede, and then if we can nick one in the second half and just pick up a few nil nils or the odd 1-0 just to get a few points on the board. But having said that, I think just the firepower of the Reds at the minute will just be too much. Maybe a 1-0 or maybe even a 2-0 later on.
That's the best they would hope for. Glavin's really only hope to get anything out of this game is a 0-0 or some sort of wild set piece. But they, Cliftonville haven't been conceding them, and Glenavon haven't been keeping them out. So a big win for Cliftonville, I would imagine, there as they roll into what will even be a bigger game the weekend after, where Linfield Tech on the Reds, huge game there. Right, can Glentoran get right against Loughgall? I said at the start of the season that I believed that Loughgall was going to get 3 points from Belfast this season. That felt a lot bolder than it does now, and you got to look at this game and think they will have few better chances quite like going against a wounded animal and not the angry, looking for revenge kind in Glenavon. I'm talking about a big thorn in the paw, sad puppy that is Glentoran. So Loughgall look so fantastic going forward. They have the confidence. They're scoring the goals. They're not scared of anybody. And if they get an early goal, ooh, that will be one of the more scary atmospheres of the week, I'd say.
Yeah, I think it's a huge cliche in football that the first goal is crucial, but in this game, I do think it's absolutely crucial that Glentoran get the first goal, because if they don't, I mean, having witnessed the Glens over the past couple of weeks, I think it could get a bit difficult for the players, the management, supporters are just going to sort of see it coming again. And if Loughgall go one up, I mean, nobody, to be honest with you, Saturday's the first time anybody's really scored goals against them. They haven't conceded more than two, I think, all season. They've done really well, you know. So, I mean, you know, if they were to nick a goal in the first half and stay 1-0 up at half time, it could be a real difficult day for evening, rather, for the Glens. I just fancy Loughgall to get something, and I think that'll end up 1-1.
Yeah, I do think that could be a very likely scoreline. Look, Glentoran could throw everything else, work really hard on this week, and blow out a team who did concede a fair amount of goals at home. They were chasing the game very much, and I think Loughgall have a really great shape and are able to adapt to teams on the fly as well as prepare really well for these games. And I do think we saw in that game against Linfield with Joel Cooper running at them, they didn't particularly love it. And you know, Loughgall have a few players out wide in the same way that Carrick do in Forsyth and Tilney. They have, you know, Andrade on one side, they mix it up who's on the other sometimes for Loughgall. So it's not a great matchup for Glentoran. And I think the way Glentoran are playing in particular, they go up against a Loughgall side at home on a Friday night, anything but a win will feel like really symbolic. This small team from the Championship getting a result over us, even though they got a draw against Cliftonville and Belfast, even though they beat Lord, there's something about this, the worst team in their eyes, that they could possibly lose to in Loughgall. We can't be losing this team compared to anybody else. So actually, a lot on the line there. So I'm going to keep my beady eyes on that one. And one which could be a bit of an interesting throwdown brawl is Newry hosting Coleraine. Coleraine have all these brilliant attackers, but how are they going to deal with this Newry City pitch, which looks to be holding up decently well for this time of the season? In previous years, we've seen it can get quite mucky and sludgy, but so far that hasn't been the case. And you know what? In the weather, it hasn't been too wet, so maybe it'll be fine. Newry have struggled at the back, as I said, worst defence in the league. And are they going to be able to hold off all of these Coleraine attackers that they have? I would say potentially not, but you know, maybe they can hold on and they can exploit a weakness of Coleraine's, and that being their defence. So is it going to be Newell and Sally or the heroes, or is it going to be one of Coleraine's six-headed attack that they have going forward?
Yeah, I'm kind of in the same boat as you. I think both defences could struggle here. I think the travel down to Newry does play a part in the Friday night a little bit, having to go down to Newry for Coleraine. I know these guys are well used to it, but Friday evening, tight sort of arena, lights on, good crowd. I'm sure Newry will bring out a good crowd, as we talked about earlier. You know, nothing else on a Friday night, let's say. Let's get down and a big night for Newry. If they can pick something up here, this is a bonus for them. We've talked about them getting results against the bottom six. If they can pick up a result here, that'll be a big bonus for them. And I can see them definitely scored, and I fancy this to be another draw. So I would take a 2-2 here because I can't see Newry keeping Coleraine out.
I agree, and I think Newry will score, but I think Coleraine will sneak it, even if it's a bit late. That is a bit of a trek down to Newry in Irish League terms, so that could have an impact. But yeah, I think Coleraine will get the goals, even if it is quite late. 2-1 for me. Ali, great to have you on once again. You did a wee subtle hint to it throughout the podcast. You have big, deep connections to Carrick, but also you have a glint in your eye for the sport of cricket, and particularly Cricket Ireland. I know their season wrapped up, or it was pretty much rained off, their final game. So is it post-season now, looking forward to next year, or what's the score?
Yeah, it's hugely post-season now. It was a very wet summer. We talk about the football side of things is going to get better weather, but we really struggled this year in the whole of Ireland in terms of weather. We had a lot of rain through July, so I really struggled there. And just unfortunate at the minute, Peter, that the World Cup is on as we speak over in India, and it's really sort of breaking my heart a little bit because Ireland unfortunately didn't qualify. Really tough gig to qualify for that in Zimbabwe earlier this year, so we didn't make it through. And it's tough watching Holland out there, who've probably taken our place, and that's a bit of a difficult watch. But going forward to next year, yeah, it'll be off season now in terms of the national side. But they travelled to Zimbabwe over December, and then next year we've got some big sides coming to Ireland. We've got, I think, Pakistan, South Africa, Zimbabwe, and then towards the end of next year, I'm pretty sure Australia are coming. So some big games for Ireland next year, and obviously I'm very involved in the local game as well. So yeah, we're looking forward already to next year, so it should be good.
And that World Cup's the 50 over format, the one
Yeah,
day.
it is a one day format at the minute. Yeah.
Just because this might be kind of interesting to some people who are interested in local sport. It's not, the cricket, I haven't been following that closely, but I think many people will remember, and it's so long ago now, that big epic run that Ireland had. It was 2007, that victory over Pakistan. That was the high
Yeah.
point. I know it hasn't exactly kept on going, but where is Ireland right now on their cricketing journey? I know they've dipped their toe into the test cricket world. I feel like I'm speaking a different language here. I feel like I have to know what I'm saying here. So that was a big step, but where are we? Are we just at the end of an era, or are we starting at the bottom? What's Ireland
No,
cricket looking like for the next couple of years?
Irish cricket actually, it's a funny thing actually, because the test thing's a big argument about whether we should have taken test status, but because it stopped our players playing in England then, because they became overseas players overnight, they're suddenly no longer able to play in England, whereas before they could play as a normal British, English, Irish person in county cricket. But that stopped overnight pretty much because they are now qualified as an overseas player because test cricket is now in Ireland. But people like it, people don't like it, but certainly the level of the game now in Ireland is way above anything I ever experienced. We've now got guys like Paul Sterling, Josh Little. Josh Little's playing in the IPL now, which is a massive thing. It's probably behind the Super Bowl, the biggest event in American football. It's now the biggest event in world sport is the IPL. So to get an Irish guy playing in that is a bit of a trailblazer. But the level of the commitment of the players now is just, it's a full-time gig now, and it's a career now. So it's a big thing, and hopefully we can progress the game. Obviously missing out in the World Cup's a massive thing. We have qualified for the T20 World Cup next year, so that's a big thing for us to make sure we get there. But yeah, missing out in the World Cups is a big thing. And obviously World Cup's on at the minute. Rugby's coming up this weekend, and it would have been great to see Ireland at both World Cups and doing well in both parts of it.
And you just never know where it could go. Of course, one of the best English cricketers of a generation was a Dubliner. So, maybe we can keep the Owen Morgans of the future, and they could build their career wearing the shamrock of Ireland. So, yeah.
Well, that's actually the opposite of what I was saying there about the English players. We couldn't play over in England now. Obviously, English players can't. England cannot take our players now.
Yeah.
They can't take them
So.
because we're now a test playing side. So, unless you declare for England, which is highly unlikely, Owen Morgan had to go because he had no choice. But now we're a test playing nation. So, looking forward to a big season next year. Should be good.
Final, totally weird, non-pedantic question about this. Is there a style of the game that Ireland are going to specialise in, and if so, why?
Well, depends on your players, really. T20 is a big leveler. It's a wee bit like playing seven-a-side football on a smaller pitch, if you want. It sort of levels it up a wee bit, and it only takes sort of one player to come off. And we've got a few sort of specialist T20 players, but actually we've been better in the one-day format, despite the fact we haven't qualified for the World Cup. We have been better in the one-day format, bit of a longer sort of game than a T20. So, yeah, it's a bit difficult now because younger players now just watch the T20, and because it's over in sort of 2.5 to 3 hours, well, it's sort of struggling out to 4 hours now, but it's a quicker game, and a lot of sort of younger players just want to whack the ball out of the park a wee bit, you know, and sort of play T20. But I think we're a 50 over one day team, really, and we're pretty good at it.
Amazing. Hopefully that made sense to a couple of people, and I'll be able to use that knowledge when I hear these people talking about cricket. I'll be able to go, well, the thing is with Ireland, like, they really got to focus on this one day cricket game. That's what the youngsters are into now. So I'll be stealing your opinions and expert thoughts. Hopefully you do not make me look stupid. Of course you won't. This is your thing. You know where your score is. And to see your thoughts, feelings and dreams on Irish cricket, Irish league football, where can they do that 24/7 via whatever Elon Musk's app is called within the next 24 hours?
Yeah, whatever we call it. Now, I'm on my personal account is at Drawing the Trade. It's my personal account if you fancy getting on that. But obviously, my PA account is Amber Army PA. So if you want to give abuse on a Saturday to the guy up on the gantry giving off to your players over the PA at Carrick, it's at Amber Army PA. And my other alter ego is obviously for the fantasy football, that's at SL Fantasy is my other alter ego.
Tremendous. Hopefully you'll be printing my name in the paper sooner rather than later. I think I'm going to have to coach up some of the boys that I picked to make that happen. But Ali, great to have you on, and until next time, cheers.
Yes, mate. Thank you. All the best. Bye.
Feels like I've spent a lot of time sitting here chatting to you, and when I say you, I mean you, John. Thanks for listening, mate. Been a lot of time in front of this mic over the past while, but hopefully it has delivered all the content you've been after. I know I've been plugging it like mad, but if you haven't listened to my interview with Jared Lawler, lots of lovely feedback. Thanks to everybody that's got in touch. There's a nice chance for you, my friend, if you haven't listened to it either. You know, a good way to do that is by listening to it on whatever your preferred podcast player is. And if you're on your preferred podcast player right now, go and let's get this, stop and look up, because you can go and hit follow on this podcast right now. It's pretty good because it means you get a notification as soon as I drop this hot piece of Irish League audio in your life every week. Good place to do it. Hundreds of you do. Thank you so much for doing that. If you also want to join another fun club, you can follow me on social media. It's at Kicking Match on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. You take it hands-free by asking your smart speaker to please play Kicking Match, an Irish League podcast. If you're dressing up something spooky for Friday the 13th, please take a picture of you at an Irish League ground, and I will be buzzing, and I promise you I will share it, as long as it just kind of isn't offensive or something like that. Thanks for listening. See you next week. Bye-bye.